This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. X-rays, CAT scans and MRIs have become common terms in our everyday language as these imaging techniques are increasingly being used to diagnose and treat diseases. But how much do you know about the professionals behind the scenes, the medical physicists who ensure that these imaging techniques are used safely? Today we are joined by Professor Ng Kwan Hong from the Department of Biomedical Imaging in the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, to tell us more about his specialty. Welcome to the show, Prof. Ng.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Can we first start with an explanation? What is the field of medical physics?
Yeah, medical physics is a very specialized branch of physics and engineering applied in medicine, where the principles of physics, where we use it in diagnosis, in treatment, or in monitoring of disease process in human. Example is like X-ray, CT scan, MRI for diagnosis. Also, if you have linear accelerators for treatment of cancer, ultrasound as well. And also, we're involved in various aspects of computing, also studying the biological effects of radiation, make sure that when you go for CT scan, for example, we are not overexposed to radiation.
What areas of medicine would medical physics be applied to?
It's basically applies in all aspects in medicine. Primarily is in radiology, in radiation oncology, even in surgery, in ENT, in ONG. You find that it is practically cut across the whole section in medicine. There are a lot of advances today.
So can you paint us a picture on a day-to-day basis? What is the scope of a medical physicist's job?
Okay, it varies from one to another. Okay? For example, those who are clinical medical physicists in a major hospital like mine at University of Malaya Medical Center, the clinical physicists, for example, besides teaching, we train the radiology residents, called MOs or oncology residents. They're involved in ensuring the quality control is done, is also make sure that all the necessary tests are performed before they start being used on the patients. And also many are involved in the, for example, procurement of equipment, writing the technical specification, do the technology assessment, and selecting the equipment which has the cost efficiency, the cost benefit to the hospital and to the patients.
Because we're talking about equipment and scanners that cost easily millions, am I right?
Yes, that's right. It is high cost, but equipment comes along with its associated risk, be it radiation or could be other form of risk that we are, this is our main area of expertise. So we often serve as advisors to the clinicians and hospital administrators. And also we are very much well aware of the technological advancement, what's the latest and what is utility. So we also often serve as advisory role in the hospital.
And a lot of the profession also involves advancing research. Can you talk a bit more about research in this area?
Yes. We have actually, the medical physics professions pioneer lots of research. For example, we see all this CT scan, MRI, PET scan. All these have been the products of years of research and efforts by the medical physicists along with engineers and clinicians. My particular area is in breast imaging, so we're looking into how we can diagnose breast cancer in the early stage using mammography or ultrasound.
Could you give us an idea of the profession in Malaysia? How many medical physicists are there, and is this sufficient for our population?
The medical physics profession is fairly new in Malaysia. In fact, it is at infancy with about 300-odd physicists, but quite a number of them serve at the Ministry of Health. They are involved in regulatory purpose, inspection, and in what we call radiation protection. Mm. But in many hospitals, we still don't have qualified clinical medical physicists. So that's why we need to train more physicists to serve the country.
Of those who are in the hospitals, out of that 300 that you mentioned, are they fairly distributed in terms of our geography, or are they concentrated in the urban centres?
Yeah, just like any other professions, we talk about doctors or even engineers, yeah, most are concentrated in the big cities, the West Coast, in the peninsula. Mm-hmm. For example, in the East Malaysia, we are very short of qualified medical physicists. In some centres in the past, we still employ expatriates to serve in the hospitals.
Do medical physicists meet with patients?
Very rarely. Occasionally, for example, a couple of times I work with the clinicians, could be a radiologist or a surgeon, in advising the patients. You know, some are very concerned when women who are pregnant and they have to go for a CT scan or they heard so much about the adverse effects of radiation. So they want kind of assurance as, oh, how much radiation dose they receive. No, I just have my chest x-ray done. So this is where I come in, working along with the clinician to advise or to reassure the patients.
Can you help me make the distinction between your specialty and a radiologist?
Basically, the medical physicists, they are not medically trained and qualified. So we can consider them as clinical scientists. Mm. But they do have reasonable knowledge of anatomy, physiology, and just a general broad knowledge about medicine in general.
And as part of your career, you have long been an advocate for increasing public understanding about radiation. What do you find are the biggest misconceptions that people have about the use of radiation in medicine?
Yeah, this has always been my lifelong passion to educate the public as well as other professions about the use of radiation in medicine. It is like a two-edged sword. On one hand, it's extremely useful for diagnosis, for treatment. You can imagine without x-ray, without CT scan, then the whole medicine will probably collapse. And then on the other hand, there is also the company health effects from if it's not used in a judicial way. And also, there is so much of publicities, mostly are negative, from the social media about the harmful effects of radiation. And we heard of Chernobyl and more recently the Fukushima accidents. And so in people's mind, they have this visual imagery of horrible things that radiation brings to our human life.
Are these fears unfounded? I mean, exposure to dangerous levels of radiation can cause very dangerous effects. And we know of the risk of cancer and mutation in the DNA and all that. So are people's fears unfounded? Or how do you manage that?
Unfortunately, this is an area, it is like ongoing battle. Same time, we make a lot of advancement, with lots of public education, forums, journal papers to educate the public. But on the other hand, we have equally same amount of negative publicity, and those are unfounded, baseless. A lot are just anecdotal, without any scientific evidence. So this is an ongoing battle, and a lot of professional bodies are involved in that. For example, I'm involved in the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. One of our tasks is to promote the peaceful use of the atomic radiation. So at the same time, we have lots of campaigns, a lot of education efforts to ensure that radiation use in a balanced way, comply with the regulation, and same time, we also want to educate the public that radiation, if it's used properly in a controlled way, will definitely benefit mankind.
When you say to ensure that radiation use is well regulated, that comes under the purview of the healthcare provider?
Yes. In most countries, it's regulated by the Ministry of Health or Department of Health. Along, each country also have its own regulatory agency. So normally, these two agencies will work hand in hand to ensure that radiation is used in a beneficial way. And by the way, it's not only in healthcare, we also use radiation in the industry, in scientific research, and even like veterinary as well.
What is the agency here that regulates?
Okay, in Malaysia, it is the AELB, the Atomic Energy Licensing Board. This is the regulatory body, and we have these acts that regulate this. Okay? But then come to the healthcare, and that responsibility is delegated to the Director General of Health, who exercises his authority over all the healthcare that includes dental and veterinary as well.
I've been speaking to Professor Ng Kwan Hong from the Department of Biomedical Imaging in University of Malaya about developments in the field of medical physics. After the break, we'll find out more about Prof. Ng's areas of research, which will potentially have a significant impact on breast cancer in Malaysia. You're listening to BFM 89.9. Welcome back to the show. I'm T. Shao Ik. We're discussing medical physics, a field of medicine that is central to the diagnosis and treatment of a lot of diseases in the modern age, but which few people know about. When you go for an X-ray or a CT scan, you may not give much thought to the scan itself, but there is an entire profession trained to formulate the dose of radiation required and how much is too much. So, Prof. Ng, quite frankly, are we becoming exposed to too much radiation through the environment and from medical services?
Well, answer is no. For a long time, in Malaysia, we have reasonable, good standards healthcare, and we have the regulations well implemented with regular audit, quality control audits as well. So we can rest assured that when we visit a hospital for a CT scan or chest X-ray, the dose received by you and I will be below the regular limit, as well as that we also ensure that the image will be of diagnostic quality so that the doctors are able to make an accurate diagnosis based on the image.
That must be a large part of the work of a medical physicist to find that balance between ensuring safe levels and yet achieving therapeutic or diagnostic efficacy. What are the challenges medical physicists face in ensuring these safe parameters for patients?
Yeah, this is, when we talk about this, it is a balancing act. It's also something we need to continue to exercise. So we have knowing that there is certain amount of risk, we use of radiation, is not zero. You have risk, and also the benefits of early diagnosis of treatment. So the risk benefits. So this is have to be balanced. And particularly with new technology they introduce, some may use a little bit more radiation. So we need to come in to check, and also we do various forms of research, try to bring down the dose, but same time we want to achieve an optimum image quality for the patient. So besides risk and benefit, the other part of the equation is the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Also make sure that its healthcare is affordable, that most citizens of the country will enjoy the benefits of such modalities.
What about the effects of these imaging techniques in children? Of course, many parents are concerned. What would you say to reassure them?
Yeah, the children are more sensitive to radiation, about 4 or 5 times more. And we exercise great precautions when children come for imaging. We make sure that they are indicated, meaning we justify why you need to send the little boy or girl for an X-ray, knowing that they have a long lifespan ahead of them. We certainly don't want to see when they grow older and they have developed cancer because of the excessive amount of radiation that they received when they were younger. And this is a very active research by the international community of this pediatric imaging.
You say that the tests or the scans or any diagnostic methods should be indicated. My concern, and I've been worried about it for a long time, is with the proliferation of health screening, which encourages otherwise healthy people to go for medical checkups. Many of them, or some of them, include scans, full body scans, as a way to for early detection of conditions. What are the dangers there of overusing these kinds of scans in otherwise healthy people?
Health screening definitely is a very hot and controversial topic in many countries today. And definitely the professionals, the medical professions, have to come in to sort of put the foot down. The justification for indication is the first principle in radiation protection. It is important we need to justify why you need. If it brings along with an early diagnosis or a better management of patients, then it's justified. And there is a lot of initiative done by various professional organizations on this to educate the healthcare professionals on the need to justify and do not misuse or abuse this health screening. Because those diagnostic equipment, they are so commonly available and they are also pretty easy to use, and that will result in, well, perhaps some who may just misuse or overuse this kind of diagnostic tools.
Is there a gap in terms of enforcing the regulations?
It is kind of hard to say that. Our Ministry of Health definitely is aware of such practices, and so far it has been reasonably well controlled. But we still need to be vigilant at all times.
And of course, one of, as you mentioned earlier in this interview as well, your area of research, your area of interest is in improving screening for breast cancer. Can you talk a bit more about your research there?
Yeah, I've been working on breast imaging for early diagnosis of breast cancer. As you know that lots of women have breast cancers and they're very worried. And today, if we can diagnose early and one could live healthy, disease-free life. So there are various imaging modalities we use. Ultrasound is one of them, MRI is another. But I've been focusing on mammography. Well, this is still the gold standard, a mammogram of women about 45 years or 50 years old to go for a baseline mammogram. So my research has been how we can optimize the image, how we can detect the early breast cancer. And this is not easy in the early stage. Another area I work on is on breast density. And that the breast density basically is the granular tissue component in the breast. This is where the breast cancers are located. At the same time, if one's breast is dense, then also it's very difficult to detect the tumour within the tissue. So we have to bring various computer techniques to improve this, and how we can quantify this density as one of the indicators to predict breast cancer. And so far, this has received lots of international interest in that. There are many research groups throughout the world have been working on this breast density. And another thing is that the breast density can be modified. For example, lifestyle is one, or might be some chemotherapeutic agents. And this could modify the breast density.
Okay, so to summarize, greater breast density makes it more difficult to detect cancer. Is that right?
Yes.
So how do you modify that? And what do you see as the result?
Okay.
What kind of lifestyle modifications, for instance?
That will mean, for example, diet, exercise. So the hypothesis is that the greater breast density would mean is the greater chance of one having a breast cancer. So that is the hypothesis, and it's been proven in certain studies. So by modifying our lifestyles, proper diet, exercise, and this could influence the breast density, we're able to reduce it to some extent.
Do we have evidence already to show that they are linked?
Yes, there are quite a number of epidemiological studies have indicated that.
And are we applying the density imaging techniques now in our screening of breast cancer?
Yes, when the radiologists report a mammogram, they use a BI-RADS system to report the density. Now, with very dense, they often would do an ultrasound scan or MRI to complement that. Now, what is interesting, in the United States, they passed a law in most states adopted this called the Breast Density Act or something like that, so that the doctors have to inform the patients that, oh, your breast is dense, therefore you need to watch out, into monitor, and also to confirm with ultrasound or MRI, these two tools that don't expose patient to radiation.
Mm. So in other words, a negative result in a woman with dense breasts may not indicate that she's free of cancer. So it indicates that she needs more careful follow-up and perhaps other types of scans. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. What got you interested in looking, in narrowing down on this area?
It's kind of... When I chose to enter medical physics, I'm thinking doing something that is beneficial to humankind in general. And I find that this field is very exciting and we can apply my knowledge in physics, engineering in this aspect. And there's so many challenges we face in imaging in general, or in particular my areas in breast imaging, because I really have to work along with the radiologists, the surgeons, pathologists in different specialties. And that is really challenging. But at the same time, it is very academically stimulating to work with this and to advance the science. And eventually you see that early diagnosis and also improving the quality of life of those patients.
And of course, this is one of the many contributions you have made to the field, which garnered you the Marie Sklodowska Curie Award in June of this year, which is the most prestigious award in medical physics given out by the International Organization for Medical Physics. And with this award, you were actually the first scientist outside of North America and Europe to receive it. Can you tell us more about what this award is given for?
Yeah, when I got the news in March, they just informed me informally about I'm the recipient. I was pretty excited and also quite unbelief, because in the past, the recipients have been very top scientists from North America and Europe. Now, this is the most prestigious award in medical physics. It's given to one who distinguishes himself in three areas, and that is in research, in the education, and professionalism. So one must excel in research in the medical physics area. In my case, it is in breast imaging and other research as well. And education, where started the Master of Medical Physics program close to 20 years ago, and which is we train many medical physicists locally as well as internationally. And that program that I established received the international accreditation from the Institute of Physics and Engineering in Medicine from UK. And this program, which is run by the University of Malaya, remains as the only university that is accredited by the UK body. So that is a very prestigious. And the other one is professionalism, where I've been involved in many international professional societies, organizations to advance this field and also to establish links with sister societies and various medical professionals to advance medical physics, as well as the many public awareness, public communication work that I've been doing.
What is Malaysia's global standing when it comes to medical physics?
Well, we still have a long way to go. We are really far behind. We started quite late compared to North Europe. This is a very established profession and medical science. And also resources. Doing research in all this area takes up a lot of resources in terms of research funding, talents. We also need lots of students. And this is an area where we are still very much lacking. Nonetheless, we are trying to catch up.
I imagine getting research funding is the huge challenge for you. Where does most of your funding currently come from?
Well, in the past, I received a couple of funding from the Ministry of Education. This is called MOSTI as well, Ministry of Science and Technology. But what I've taken advantage is international collaboration. I collaborate with my colleagues from New Zealand, Australia, Singapore, in Japan and Korea, and then Europe, in UK, in France, Germany, and North America, United States, Canada, and more recently in South America, like Brazil as well. So I collaborate with them, and that has been very fruitful. We publish lots of papers, are very meaningful. Just in particular, like my area in breast cancer, I'm doing this comparing the breast density between the Latin America women and from other countries like in Japan and Taiwan. And this kind of intercomparison, you see there is any variation in breast density and how is it related to mortality from breast cancer. So this is our work that brings up the international profile and also is very meaningful.
Okay, that's very interesting. But worldwide, disease trends are changing as well. We're seeing an increase in non-communicable diseases like cancers, which obviously where radiation oncology comes in, or even other diseases where imaging guided treatment is used. So how do you see medical physics advancing and playing a greater role in patient care?
Yeah, for example, the other part of my research is in the cardiovascular disease, like using CT to work with the cardiologists, for example, developing new techniques or improving their techniques for diagnosis of various cardiovascular diseases. You probably have heard of like calcium scoring is one. You look at CT angiography. So all these are the advances. It's advancing very fast. We have superb technology. So the utilization and how to use this technology in a efficient manner to benefit more patients. And this is an area that we are actively pursuing now.
Well, I think it's fantastic to recognize the profession of medical physicists and to see all of you, more of you hopefully, stepping out from behind the scanners or the machines where we usually associate the profession and to be able to acknowledge the value that you bring to medicine in general. So thank you very much, Professor. I've been speaking to Prof. Ng Kuan Hong from the Department of Biomedical Imaging from the Faculty of Medicine in University of Malaya about the field of medical physics and its application in medicine. You've been listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.